in life, we try to stay positive, we try to stay upbeat, we try to maintain a firm emunah on the Rabbeinu Shleilam, we try to do mitzvahs and just always do the right thing. But then, very often, as we, I think, all know, we have those moments that we lack that clarity. We lack that self-assurance, self-esteem, belief. Things start getting a little bit unclear, murky. Sometimes our mind is filled with question marks. Doesn't matter. What happens if I don't do this? Does Hashem really care? There's so many other people in the world, billions of people. Does my mitzvahs matter? Does my avodah matter? Does my kavana matter? Does it matter as much as I think it does? And those are moments that we are in doubt, in question, and it makes life very difficult. We like the moments that we have very great clarity in everything that we do and that we're not in any way caught up in the nagging svekas that sometimes creep into our minds. And this, Rabbi Say, these svekas is the kayach of Amalek. Amalek, or more later in history, a great-grandson of Amalek by the name of Haman, who we begin to celebrate his downfall this evening as we mark Purim Katan, a day that's very happy on the calendar, a day that we don't say Tachanun, a day that we already enter the rarefied airspace of Purim. These are days that we have to focus on the Muhammad LaHashem BaAmalek Midar Dar, the every generational Muhammad, this battle that we have to fight against the forces of Amalek, the forces of Haman. And they get stronger and stronger almost as time passes. The Svarim HaKadoshim write that Amalek is Begematria Safek, because Amalek represents those doubts that enter our minds, enter our subconscious, and rattle us sometimes. And they make us not clear, not sure if everything or anything that we're doing is worthwhile. Does it matter? Are we relevant to the Rabbeinu Shalom in this world? There are many makairis for this concept that Amalek represents the kayach of Safek, this doubt, this baseless, irrational doubt, which is able to cool us down, the fervor that we have in our Avodas Hashem, our Yiddishkeit, sometimes as hot as sometimes it could be, it gets very cool. And that's the kayach of Asher Karcha Baderech. Amalek was the power that, as we were leaving Mitzrayim and we were on fire and all the Umas Ha'olam were afraid of us, Rashi brings the Chazal that Amalek comes and jumps into the hot bathtub, as he puts it. And by doing so, even though he got burnt, but he was able to cool down the image, the fear, the intensity that Klal Yisrael represented in the world. Asher Karcha Baderech is the belief that Amalek tries to perpetuate that everything in life is nothing but happenstance. Asher karcha, it's a lashon mikra. Nothing happens by design, by providence. No, it's all happened. Everything that happens is just by chance. Don't take it so seriously. Don't read too much into it. Things happen. Accidents happen. Calamity happens. Good things happen. It's just coincidental. This is what Amalek wants us to believe. And by doing so, taking away our most valuable possession, which is the belief in Hashgacha Pratis, the belief that everything that happens in our life both nationally and personally, are all the design of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mashkiach on us every step of the way, every breath that we take, every move that we make is designed by providence, and that nothing happens by accident. Nothing is by chance. That's how a Yid is supposed to believe. But when we stop believing that, or when we have a momentary lapse of believing that, that means that Amalek is now claiming victory over us. There's a pasuk that says, Hayesh Hashem bekirbeinu im ayin. Klal Yisrael doubted, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu amongst us or not? And then the next pasuk says, Vayavai Amalek, Vayilochem im Yisrael berafidim. As soon as we have doubts, does Hashem really exist? Does Hashem really dwell amongst us? Does HaKadosh Baruch Hu really favor us? Are we really the chosen people? As soon as those things begin to happen, Vayavai Amalek, that is the perfect opportunity for Amalek to jump in to the fray and begin to do his battle. There's a Gemara at the end of Kiddushin on Daf Pei Bezim and Aleph that speaks about Kasher Shebetabochim, the most honest, the most ethical of butchers, is Shutfa Shel Amalek. He is the partner of Amalek. What does a butcher have to do with Amalek? A kosher butcher, regular butcher, the most kosher of butchers are the partners of Amalek. So if you look at Rashi, Rashi says that Sveikai Trefais Bois Liyadai V'chasam Amaynayom Achilan. If let's say a butcher has a suffix, I'm not sure if this animal is really kosher or not. What should he do? He should go run to the Rav and ask a Shaila. But if he finds out that the cow that he bought to carve up and to sell is treif, now he's out many thousands of dollars. So this suffix that he has in front of him, this suffix that this butcher has, makes him tilt towards being machsheret. It's okay, it's probably going to be fine. I did this shaila before, it looks pretty similar. The rav is going to be okay with it. It's a big chisaron kiss for me. And he'll be matzdik, saying that this animal that's a suffix, treifa, is kosher. That's shutafei shel Amalek. That concept that when we have a suffix in any sense that we say, we'll tilt it to the side, that's kosher, don't worry about it, suffix is not a big deal, it's fine. So that's shutafei shel Amalek. That means that you're shutaf Amalek because that's the force of Amalek. Amalek represents suffix. Amalek festers. Amalek is able to thrive in any matzav of suffix. Whenever there's a suffix in our mind, don't we have this all the time? We're sitting down and we want to eat something. And then we're not sure what bracha to make. So what do? We should, ask a rav, or maybe look it up online, ask Rabbi Google, something just to find, a psak. What do? Rav Huttner once had a cute, sharp line. He says that somebody asked him on a certain type of food. I don't think it was a wrap. But they didn't have wraps back then, but some food like that nobody really knows exactly what bracha to make on it. So he says, they said, what bracha do you make on this? They asked him. So he said, a very quiet bracha. Very quiet bracha. That's the type of food you make a quiet bracha on. What does that mean? It means that when we are in a suffix, okay, we'll just like do a quick, head fake and we're good. That's Amalek. Amalek loves when we're in a suffix and we're just like, it's fine. It's not just suffix in brachas, it's suffix in other halachas and hilchas Shabbos. It's a suffix in hashgacha pratis, a suffix in bitachin, a suffix in amuna, a suffix in how could the Holocaust happen, a suffix in how could October 7th happen, and how could all these things happen? I don't know. Amalek loves that. Well, as soon as you start having these gnawing doubts in your mind, how could this be? Where is the Rabbeinu Shalom? Vayava Amalek. Amalek comes in and Amalek he takes out his toolbox and his wrench and he starts doing a job on us. Because that's the kayach of Amalek. That's suffix. Suffolk equals Amalek. Amalek equals Suffolk. It's fascinating that even in the Torah itself, how often do we have in the Torah a suffix in how to pronounce a word? I think it's just one time in the entire Torah, and that's not coincidentally in the Parsha of Amalek, in the Parsha of Zachar. We right, Parsha Zachar, we say Zecher or Zecher. We're not sure. We lost the Messiah. We have a Messiah for every other word in the Torah. But all of a sudden, the Parsha of Amalek, the suffix, do you say, is the memory of Amalek, Zecher Amalek, Zecher Amalek? So you have to repeat the whole pasuk again, or you have to just say that word again. Is that just a coincidence that the only suffix in Kriyas HaTorah is Parshat? No. That represents, that symbolizes, that is Amalek. Amalek is the ability to put question marks in our mind. He's not telling us there's no God. He's not telling us. But as soon as he has an opportunity to sow doubt in our minds, he's there. He's there. I want to share with you a vart that I said once many years ago. I hold it's an emes vart. On this very sugya, on this concept. There's a Gemara in Megillah. The Gemara in Megillah is on Daf Tes Zayin. The Gemara says that when Haman was supposed to go and honor Mordechai, remember that whole story when he came before the king, Achashverosh, Bachatzai Salaila, and he was trying to tell Achashverosh all the things that he thinks that he should do to honor a person, Asher HaMelech Chavitz Bikarai, thinking that it was himself. And, you know, so he said, I think he should wear the king's garment, ride on the king's horse, somebody should call out in front of him, Kalchayes Al-Ish, give him big pomp. This is, he was talking about himself. And Achashverosh says, okay, everything that you just said to do, do it to Mardukhai. Al-Tapel, Davar Mikol Asher Dibarta, everything, they don't leave a thing out. Every single thing that you said that you felt was chashuv for a king, I want you to do that for Mardukhai. Obviously, Haman wasn't so keen on this. Mordechai was his arch enemy, but he had no choice. He was going to get killed otherwise. So he goes and he searches for Mordechai, and he finds him giving a shir. He was giving a shir to the Rabbanon on the halachas of Kmitza. Halachas of Kmitza, that's what he found. And as soon as Mordechai saw Haman coming with a horse, he thought that, you know, he was there to kill him. So basically, he said to his talmidim, okay, run away before he kills all of us. So they ran away, and Haman comes over to Mordechai, and he says, what was that shir that you were just giving? It looked very interesting. What was the sugya that you were learning together? So Mordechai explained, he says, I'm learning the halachas of kmitza. He says, tell me about that. What is kmitza? He says, okay. Kmitza is that during the time that the Beis HaMikdash was around, this was obviously between the two Batei Mikdash that the whole story of Purim took place in Persia during the time of between the Bayis Rishon and Sheni. He says when we had the Beis HaMikdash, so a person would bring a karban mincha. Karban mincha is like a flower offering, and what happens is the kayin, on behalf of the owner of the carbon, he takes there's like a bowl of flour. The kayin puts his hand into the bowl and he makes a fist. And then he sort of takes the top flour off and the bottom flour off, on the top of the fist and the bottom of the fist. And that he puts on the mizbeach. And everything that remains outside of the fist is called shirayim, and that's given to the kayanim to eat. So the Gemara in Yuma. So let me just finish the story. So Haman says, wow, that's amazing. He says, your fistful of flour, which costs, how much does it cost? 5 cents? How much is a fistful of flour? Came and pushed away my 10,000 talents of silver, meaning Haman bribed Achashverosh to buy the Jewish nation, to destroy them for 10,000 silver talents, millions of dollars. And your little fistful of flour was able to override all of that that I offered. What's the pshat in this Gemara? So I want to say like this. This is what I think is the pshat in this Gemara. There's a Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma is on Daf Mem Zayin Mabay. It's a fascinating Gemara. It speaks about the halachas of kmitza. And it says as follows. Let's say a person has Beina Beinayim Shamalei Kamtsoi Mahu. Beina Beinayim, meaning when the Kayin scoops his hand into that flour, what happens with the flour that's in between, that's pressed in between the fingers? Beina Beinayim it's called. What's Allah? He says, the Gemara says, the one that's closest, like if you'd open your hand and it's on the inside, the flour that's inside that you could see, that's for sure Kaidish. That's part of the flour of the, that's the Karav Mincha that goes on the Mizbeach. The part that's outside, on the outside of the hand, that's not part of the Mincha. That's part of the Shirayim. But if you would open up your fingers and the flour that resides between the fingers, what's the halacha of that? And the Gemara says, the Gemara says, after this question was posed in the Beis Medrash, after the question was posed, so Hadar Pashta, they resolved it. They have an answer. What's the answer? Beina Beinayim Safik Ninhu. Beina Beinayim, I know the answer, it's a Safik. It's a suffix? That's your answer? That's the best you could do? That we knew before the Gemara started. Before the Kasha, before the Teretz. Beina Beinayim, suffix. Ah, okay, thank you. Now it's clear. Everything is clear to me now. It's a suffix. So if you look in Taisus and you look in the Ritva, you ask this question, what are you talking about? Primarily the Ritva. The Taisus has the same Kasha. The Ritva puts it a lot clearer. It says, what does it mean? Hadar Pad? This is your Pasha. This is a suffix? So the Ritva says like this. He says that there are some things in life that are not a suffix because we don't know what it is. We don't know whether it's this way. I don't know what bracha to make on something. I don't know if it's a shahakal. I don't know if it's adam. I don't know if it's a mezainas or it's a mitzvah. I don't know. That's a suffix in din that you have to paskin what it is. You have to do your research. You have to find out what is it. Mativa shul barzeh, and you paskin. That's one type of suffix. There's another type of suffix that's not a suffix because you don't know. It's a suffix in Metzias. The example, and it's a classic example, this is what the Ritva says, is like Bein HaShmashis. Bein HaShmashis is a time that's lo yayim laylai. It's not because we don't know whether it's night or day that we treat it like a twilight zone, but rather it's because it's, by nature, is a suffix. It has a din suffix. It's not that it's we don't know what it is if it's Yom or Laila. It is a mixture. It is a question mark in Mitzias of Suffolk. The Ritva says that's what the Gemara's answer. You thought that it was a question. Is it this way or is it that way? The answer is it's a Suffolk and Din. It's both. Whatever you have to, in any way that you would treat, let's say if the Shirayim and the Kaidish would get mixed together, whatever the halacha is in that case, that's how you would paskin with that Beina Beinayim. It's a din suffix. It's not a suffix that I don't know. It's a suffix that I know it's a suffix. Very big difference. I know it's a suffix. It's a suffix in Mitzis. There's no answer. It's a suffix. What does that mean? Haman is trying to destroy Klal Yisrael. And he was on a roll. He got the ring of the king and he was going to be able to destroy them. And he sent out documents and he was already on a tear. He was going to do this. All of a sudden he sees that his star is starting to go down a little bit. It's descending. He has to pull around Mordechai in the streets, embarrassed. Then he gets the bucket of stuff on top of his head by his own daughter. Things started going south for him at that point. But he says, like, what are you doing there with the kmitza? The kmitza, tell me a little about this kmitza that you're doing. Because he understood that this kmitza wasn't just a halacha. This is something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was showing him. Even Amalek, even Haman knows that there's no such thing as happenstance. Everything has meaning. They don't want us to know that, but they chap this. What's the story with this kmita? He said, well, when the Beis Medrash was around, we used to do this. And Haman all of a sudden understood that these Jews, I'm not going to be able to destroy them with tzfeikus. You know why? Because a Jew has the ability to be mekadesh a tzfeik. It's not that a tzfeik, we can't get down from tzfeikus. We don't have the ability, we don't have the luxury of allowing a tzfeik to do us in. We have to transcend the tzfeik, uplift the tzfeik, and make a tzfeik holy. Bein ha-beinayim mahu, tzfeik. It's a din tzfeik, and we're proud of it. This is what we, as Jews, go through every single day of our life. It doesn't mean that we have to be perfect. We're not perfect. We have tzfeikus, and we're plagued with doubts, and some days are great days, and some days are horrible days, and some days are in between. But a Jew has to understand, like the Hilchos Kmitza, that there is a din tzfeik. We could sanctify even a tzfeik. We don't have to always be perfect. We have to understand that even if we have tzfeikus, it's okay, we'll uplift them. We're going to make them better. We're going to look at them in a positive light, and we're going to be able to get through, push through those dark moments until we're able to once again be whole. But don't let it get us down. And as soon as Haman chapped that, he says, your little kmitza is able to drive away my millions of dollars of silver that I gave Achaz. It's all worthless because my only kayach is suffik. If you're able to take a suffik and sanctify it, make it holy, then I'm finished. That's my end. I want to tell you a beautiful story. Chaim Berlin has a camp in the summer. It's called Camp Morris. It's a beautiful camp up in the Catskill Mountains, and Chaim Berlin goes there, Sfardik Yeshiva goes there, and it's a beautiful Makom Torah situated on a very large piece of land, very flat. Guys learn outside in the grass, and they learn in the Beis Medrash, a beautiful Beis Medrash, and it's a magnificent campus. If you ever go up to the country in the summer, it's Kedai just to Waze Camp Morris and just walk into the Beis Medrash, you'll be very impressed. In Camp Morris, in the Beis Medrash, there's a kailal for mechanchim. It's been there for decades and decades, which means that if there are rabbeim that in the summer they are not teaching their classrooms, and these are accomplished talmidei chachamim themselves, or they're maybe teaching in the mountains in a camp, but in the afternoon they want to go and learn in a kailal, then they get paid to learn in a kailal, and they're able to learn with chavrusas on a very high level, and it's a beautiful thing to be able to behold this chash of a kailal. There was a certain Rebbe in the yeshiva that was part of this kailal. He was a Rebbe in a certain yeshiva in Brooklyn, and he joined this kailal, and then he noticed that there was a balabayas that was learning every day. He was coming into the Beis Medrash. He clearly looked like he was a novice in learning. He brought his art scroll, Gemara, and he was trying his best to learn, and he was reading the art scroll on the top, on the bottom, and whenever he had questions, he would go over to this rabbi or that rabbi, and he was very much, you know, trying, and he felt very good about himself. And one day this rabbi, who was a rebbe, he started engaging with this balabayas in conversation. What's your story? What are you doing here? And he explained to him that he never had a chance to learn yeshiva. And he's off in the summer, and now but he said, I have a very late stage cancer, Le'olenu. I'm dying. So I want to be able to chaparayin, like a little bit of learning. It's my last chance in this world to be able to learn. And I have this opportunity, so I'm living, you know, in the country here. In the summer, I figured I would come get an art school Gemara. And it's so nice to learn every day. I'm, you know, getting my feet wet with Gemara. And if I can't understand what the art school is saying, I go to one of these accomplished talmidei chachamim. And it's very, very enjoyable. And I'm thriving here. This is unbelievable. A couple of weeks later, this Rebbe is looking for this balabayas, and he's not in the normal place that he would sit, but he sees him on the far end of the Beis Medrash, and he looks very despondent, very depressed. And he makes a beeline over to him and he says, how you doing? What's wrong? Everything okay? You don't look so good. He says, you know, I started off very strong this summer and I came and I got my Art School Gemara and I was trying and I was talking to you and learning and I was talking to him. But then I realized that what does it matter what I'm learning? Does it really, really matter if I learn? You know, I don't even understand what Art Scroll is writing on the bottom. And then, you know, and then I go to you and I hardly understand what you're saying to me and explaining this. And like, and you know, what is this? In other words, Amalek, the suffix started getting into his brain and saying like, what's this worth? I'm sure we have these thoughts also sometimes. Is it really worth it? Like, does it really matter if I chop this taisis or I don't chop? If I go to shir, if I don't go to shir? If I understand every kutza shal yud or not? Like, okay, listen, it's not going to make a big deal. Maybe for big talmid chachamim, it matters. But for me, it doesn't matter. And this is what this man was saying. And he was like very depressed, which is what suffix does to a person, which is exactly what Haman, what Amalek loves. So this Rebbe said, I want you to know something. I heard just last night on a Jewish radio station the following story, and I think it's very apropos to what you're going through. And he says like this. There was a very famous conductor. His name was Toscanini. Toscanini is a very, you know, in the world of Philharmonic music, everybody knows Toscanini. He was like the greatest conductor of orchestras in his time. I think he died in like the 1950s. And there was a biographer that was writing a big book on him, Bechayev. And he called him up, this Toscanini, and he said, listen, I want to have another interview with you for your book. And would tonight be okay for us to meet? Toscanini says no. He says, tonight is not a good night. We have to do it another night. He says, will you have something more important to do? What it would, like, you know, he's crying a little bit. What do you have to do tonight? So he says, tonight there's a very big concert that's being played overseas in a foreign country. And I used to be the conductor of that particular Philharmonic Orchestra. And I have to hear on my shortwave radio, I have the ability to pick up that concert in real time, which was a chiddush back then, in the 1950s, you know, that wasn't so common. He's able to hop it on shortwave radio, if you know what that is. And I have to hear it very carefully. I can't be distracted at all. I have to just sit and listen with all of my concentration on this concert. So this was fascinating to the biographer. He says, if I don't talk, would it be okay if I come and I observe you, the great Toscanini, listening to the concert? He says, if you promise not to say a word, not to distract me, fine. Otherwise, you come tomorrow night, but not tonight. He says, okay, I'm coming tonight. So he drives over to his house, and he comes, and the concert's about. He says, remember, you cannot say a word. I'm listening with all of my concentration to the concert. You can't disrupt me at all. Don't talk, don't breathe. Okay. And Toscanini gets it on the shortwave radio, and he's listening to the entire concert. Maybe it took an hour, maybe more. And then afterwards, he shuts off the radio. And the biographer asks him, beautiful. Now, wasn't that a beautiful concert? And Toscanini was very bothered. Something was bothering Toscanini. And he says, no, something is very wrong. So he said, what's wrong? He says, there's 120 pieces in this orchestra. And there's supposed to be 13 violins, but there was only 12 violinists. There was one violin that was missing, and I couldn't get over it. That it bothered me so much that there was one violin. Out of 120 pieces, he chapped that there was one violinist that was not playing, that was not there. And the biographer was like, come on, give me a break. That's impossible. You don't know that. You just made that up, right? He says, I'm telling you, there was one violinist that was missing, and it bothered me. So the next day, this biographer calls up that concert hall in that foreign country, and he says, yes, I have to speak to the conductor there. And he comes and he says, tell me, was all of the orchestra players there? He says, all of them but one. There was one violinist that he called in sick a few minutes before the concert started. We could not replace him. And it was missing one violinist. This guy was Nispal, that Toscanini was able to chop this. So he comes back to Toscanini and he says, you know, B'mchilas Kveid Rabbeinu, says, I owe you, you know, you have to give me a cup, be meichel me. So I doubted you. I didn't think it was shayach for a human being to know on a, it wasn't like you were even at the concert, that you were counting pieces or that you were in a side room that you could hear. It was on a transistor radio, on a shortwave radio, that it's crackly as it is. It wasn't, the technology wasn't there that you can get like perfect sound. And you were able to chop that there was one piece missing. How did you know that? How is it possible for your ear to pick that up even? So he says, you have to understand. He says, the difference between me and you. You are an audience. You're part of the audience. So for your audience, they're just basically happy. If they get the, you know, they know that that this is Beethoven and it's being played and whatever, they give a standing ovation, they don't care. They don't chop what's missing. It sounds good to the novice ear, it sounds fine. I'm a conductor. To me, every single note has to be heard. It has to be played, or else my job is not done. I have to make sure that every note that Beethoven had in mind, that Mozart had in mind, is played. And if there's one note that's missing, that means that there's a missing violin player. There's one violin that's not there, that's not sounding that note. And that makes all the difference to me in the world. That's the story that he had heard on the radio. He says, I want you to know something. He says, maybe to you, says this Rebbe to this Balabais, maybe to you, you feel that there are people that, you know, that are able to be much better than you in learning, and they're steigen, and they're chopping everything, and they're giving, they're understanding share, they're giving share, they're chazering, and they're able to have asmada, and those are the people that count. And you're learning on a very basic, superficial level, is irrelevant in the scheme of things. He says, that's only true from your perspective. He says, but from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, every single note counts. Every word that you're learning, as difficult as it is, and maybe even precisely because it's so difficult, it's chashuv to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the conductor of the world. You might have your doubts, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, rest assured, is able to listen to every single word, every single Rashi, every Taisis, every letter that you're learning in Torah is chashuv by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like Toscanini was able to pick up on every note. That's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu picks up on every ice, every letter of Torah that we learn is chashuv to the Philharmonic of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A half a year later, this Rebbe bumps into the son of this man, and he asks, how is your father feeling? He says, my father was nifter a few weeks ago. But I want you to know something. He said, since camp ended, he was on such a high from something that you had told him, and every single day of his life until his last day, he was learning Gemara with his art scroll. And he said, he kept saying with such confidence that I am learning for the conductor of the universe. I am learning Torah for the conductor of the universe. When Amalek comes into our minds and puts these doubts, plants these seeds of doubt, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. Does it really matter if I wake up in the morning for davening? Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu really care that I'm there or not? Does he care if I put on tzitzis today or not? Does he care about my tefillin or not? Does he care about my limud haTorah? Does he care about my chesed? Does he care about my ben adam l'chaver, ben adam l'makom? Does it really matter? Look at all the good Jews out there. There are big tzaddikim out there. They're doing their job. I don't think it matters what I'm doing. I'm such a, my level of learning is in chashuv. I'm not a big tzaddik. I have a yetzahara up to the wazoo. What is it worth? That's Amalek. The way that we fight Amalek is we kasher the suffix. Beina beinayim mahu, suffik. You have a doubt? Okay. Stay strong. Learn Musar. Fake it till you make it. Get up in the morning and daven. Go to Seder and learn. And continue to understand that there is a Rabbeinu Shlom, and whether or not today is a good day or not, I'm going to kasher the suffik. That's the job of a yid. It's not to say we always have to be perfect. It's not to say that we can never have sveikus in our minds. We have sveikus, and our malik will try to really compound the sveikus and make us crazy until we want to like just lose it and drop it and just run. But on Purim Katan, we have to remind ourselves that that's Haman, that's Hamalek, that's not Tyridic. That's exactly what we're not supposed to do. What we are supposed to do is we have to be machshir the suffix. We have to make the suffix kosher. I once had an idea that the Gemara says in Chulin, Mardechai min ha-Taira minayin. How do you know Mardechai min ha-Taira? Where do you find in the Taira, in the Chumash, a reference to Mardechai? And the Gemara says that by the Samamanim, by the 11 spices of the Ketores, one of them is called Mar Durar. Umetargaminan Mari Dachya. And the Targum of those words is Mari Dachya, which sounds a lot like Mardechai. It's the same letters. So that's the remez to Mardechai min ha-Taira. The words Mar Durar, which is the Chumash's way of saying about this spice, Mar Durar, Mar is Gematria 240, which is the same Gematria as Suffolk, which is the same Gematria as Amalek. Mar, 240, Durar. What does Durar mean? Ukrasam Durar, you set free. The job of Mardechai is to take Sveikus and let them free. Clear up your mind of Sveikus. Allow the sveikus to just fly away. Free up the sveikus. Ein simcha kataras hasveikus. There is no greater simcha in life than to be able to finally get rid of those sveikus, to be able to be matter those sveikus. Whatever the suffix is, just stop, get clarity. When you have clarity, when you ever have like a decision that you have to make, a dilemma, should I do this, should I not do this? Should I go here? Should I not go there? Should I do this for my career? Should I marry this girl and not marry? And you don't know. You're back and forth, back and forth, making him a sugar, right? The point that you're able to paskin, this is what I'm doing, and I'm not going to look back. This is my decision. There's no greater simcha than that moment. Ein simcha kataras hasveikus. When you finally are able to decide this is what I'm doing, that's happiness. That's joy. You don't have to be plagued anymore, bogged down with these dilemmas back and forth. By the way, just parenthetically, I always thought that dilemma is from the same word as dilma. Dilma is a Lushan and Aramaic, meaning, you know, maybe. That's what a dilemma is. Maybe. I don't know. I'm in a world of maybe. I don't want to be in a world of maybe. I want to be in a world of certainty. That's joy. The joy of Purim is that simcha being matir a suffik, the simcha of mar derar, let the suffik be free. Just get it out of your brain. Make decisions. Don't live in that land of Switzerland, that neutral territory, that not here and not there, nishta and nishta there. I want to be able to be clear with my mind. I want to be able to be machshir the suffik. I want to make that beina beinayim au suffik. I'm clear. I'm good with it. I own the suffix. I'm able to live with the suffix. And I'm able to then move on and try to absolve myself from sveikus. But don't let sveikus stare you in the face, make you afraid, make you shake you, rattle you to your core because I don't know. That's Amalek, that's Haman. We don't live in that world. A Jew doesn't live in that world. The world wants us to be meshuggah with sveikus. And the world is doing today a full court press on us and making us question our very ability to live, to exist. They don't want us. From the river to the sea, they question the very existence of Klal Yisrael. This is not the first time in history at every B'chol Dar V'Dar, Ayin Dumalein El Chalei Seinu. This is not new. This is a repetitious cycle in Klal Yisrael's history. They want us to say to ourselves, maybe we're wrong. Maybe we don't have the moral authority to do this. Maybe we don't belong in this land. Maybe we should just cower and run away. Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinum ayin v'yavay amalek. But that's not what a Yid is. A Yid is resilient. A Yid is able to stare that in the face and say, that's Haman, that's Amalek. And that's not me. I know who I am. Baruch Hashem, I'm a Yid. Ashreinu matev chalkeinu. We're zeichet to be Yidden. We're zeichet to have the Torah. We're zeichet to have mitzvahs. We're zeichet to have clarity. We're zeichet to be able to know what's right and wrong. We have a good moral compass, which is the Torah. Don't let anyone shake you from that core belief. In the morning we wake up, we say, Maidanu, we don't think about, should I get out of bed? Should I not get it? I'm getting out of bed. What's the shaila? I'm going to seder. I'm going to chazer my learning. I'm going to go to shir. I'm going to listen and I'm going to try to chazer shir. I'm going to chap shir. And I'm going to do everything that I can. I'm going to keep Shabbos properly. I'm going to keep yanta properly. I'm going to learn halacha so that I'm able to be fluent and conversant in all of the kutzei shel yid and all those sifkatans of the Mishnah Berurah. This is the type of yid that I don't want to live in a world of suffix. With my bitachon, I'm going to be strong. With my hashkafas, I'm going to be strong. With my values, I'm going to be strong. With my ability to have clarity, that's what I want. Mar derar. This is the simcha of Purim. This is the avaida Purim katan. To be able to look at Amalek and say, no, I'm not falling for that. I know that you want to creep into my mind and to sow seeds of doubt and make me question my ability to function and to have my self-esteem rocked, but I'm not going to give in. I'm a Yid. I have this Mizera Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They never deviated from a course. They never wavered. They understood what their mission was and they fulfilled it. Moshe Rabbeinu, Aaron, Klal Yisrael, the Shiftei Ka, everything was clear by them. And l'dar achar dar, it's clear by us. We didn't survive all these thousands of years in Galus by getting frightened of the sveikas around us, internally, externally. We were able to rise to the occasion and transcend all the sveikas, to be able to be kashering all the suffik. Bein ha-beinem, ma'u suffik, that's a din. We're fine with that. We could live with the suffik, but now we have to be machshir the suffik. We have to free up the sveikas. And the simcha of Purim is to be able to understand that there's a Rabbeinu Shlem in the world, there's Hashgacha Pratis. It's interesting. The simcha of Purim, what's the shir? Chai v'nish l'psume v'puria adlo yada bein araham and l'baruch mardechai. Adlo yada, that's a suffix, right? I don't know whether Ar Haman Baruch Mardechai, you don't know? That's a suffix. Isn't that what Amalek is all about? What's going on? The answer is, yeah, that's what we do. That's what a Yid does. A Yid says, I'm making the suffix into a din. I'm making a suffix into, I could live with your suffix. I'm not going to be scared of your suffix. I'll incorporate the suffix into the Shulchan Aruch. But I'm not going to allow the suffix to bring me down. I'm going to elevate the suffix. I'm going to make it a mitzvah to be mesupuk. That's fine. But I'm going to stay committed to the ideals of the Torah HaKadosha every single moment of my life. And I'm not going to allow the influence of Amalek, the influence of Umas Olam, to shake me to the core and to allow the Sveikas to become something that I am afraid of.